BewilderingStories.com, your number one source for online literature, in association with Attic Productions, presents another exciting adventure of Rick Vargo as the Skull Hunter. Episode 3, Tis the Season. Our story begins on a snowy December day in downtown Chicago. I like to wake up to fresh snow on an early Chicago morning. I especially like it when the winter dumps several feet of snow all at once. Like a pure white blanket, it covers the dirt and grime of the city. Most people hate it, well, but I like the fact that the city seems to stop as people go about digging themselves out. The streets and sidewalks look clean and clear. It's almost like a deserted world, empty of corruption, lies, and deceit. By mid-morning, the sun shines down, making the snow crystals glitter like little lights. The buildings seem to shine in the brilliant sun. The air is crisp and quiet. Yeah, it sounds corny, but I like that time of year. It was late December, the night before Christmas. I'd just spent another lonely evening in a grease-pit diner, eating stale turkey sandwiches with a side of runny cornmeal dressing. It was tasteless, but the upside was, well, it was bad, too. Just me and some old fry cook who couldn't give a digger's damn about the upcoming holiday.
What you looking so down about?
The cook sneered at me as he wiped off the speckled linoleum countertop.
You and me got it made, mister. I mean, think of all those poor lousy slobs who work all year just to travel with some loudmouth kids somewhere they don't want to go. When they get there, they're eating food they hate with people they don't even like. And there ain't nothing they can do about it, because if they complain, well, some old battle-axe of a wife nags them into the ground. Pennies to dollars, they'd change places with you right now.
I looked at the haggard old man with thin white hair, grease-stained t-shirt, and a 3-day growth on his face. I looked into those hollow eyes. I'd let him. I then threw my money on the counter and walked out. I walked around the city most of the night, worried that I was becoming like that sad old cook, all alone and liking it. What had I done in my life? Who out there really cared about me? Then my mind went back a few months to a woman and her young daughter in Wisconsin. I saw their faces when I closed my eyes every night. I heard her voice in my dreams laughing as we sat at the old wooden table she had made, eating the supper she had fixed. It made me feel warm and safe. In the morning, I'd wake right back up in this pile of crap I'd been calling a life.
You're not ready yet, but someday you will be,
she had said to me just before I left them standing on a broken-down porch.
Well, what's wrong with today? I mean, don't I deserve some happiness in my life? Look at me. Look at...
I stopped when I realized that in the snow behind me were two sets of footprints. The snow was fresh, and I thought I had been the only one walking in it, but behind me were two sets of fresh prints leading to the spot where I was standing. I looked ahead of me, but there was no prints. I spun around, but I was all alone.
Who's there? If somebody's there, show yourself.
I kept turning, thinking that at any moment a vision would appear in front of me in the falling snow, but nothing happened.
I must be getting tired. Standing in a snowstorm, talking to myself.
I snugged up the scarf around my neck and headed for my office, which had also been my temporary home for the last few months. On the way, I began to realize that the weather had turned decidedly worse. It was bitterly cold and the wind was inescapable. Chicago had always had a breeze running through it, but this was strong and steadily increasing. Snow was pouring from the sky. It felt like needles when it hit the skin. I finally made it to my office building and struggled to get the door open, pushing snow and fighting wind. Sam, the night watchman, greeted me and helped me close the door.
Heck of a night, eh, Mr. Vargo?
Yeah, you might say that.
I pulled my snow-soaked hat from my head and loosened my coat.
I've been listening to the radio, and they're saying that some weird cold front has parked itself right over off Air City.
Is that right?
Yes, sir. They say they haven't seen it like before, and it just sort of come up all of a sudden and circling the city.
Yeah, that is strange.
Yes, sir. It sure is. Cause my pa told me a long time ago, he said, son, there's two things in this world you can't get away from. That's taxes and the weather. And you can't do a thing about either of them. That's what he used to say.
Your pa sounds like a pretty smart fella.
Well, now, I don't know about that. He wasn't what you might call an educated man. But he worked hard all his life. We never had much, but we were never hungry. He put six kids all the way through high school. He may not have had an education, but he made sure we did. Every Christmas, I remember, he'd gather us for church and pray. Oh, how that man could pray. And give thanks for every blessing that we had. He taught me that every day on this earth is a blessing, and we gotta share that with others. Every day alone was a wasted day.
I stood and looked at Sam with his brown eyes twinkling. A smile blazed across his face. I could tell that the memories of his father were rushing through his mind, making him feel happy, snug, secure. It was like a fire that burned deep within him, lighting his face with a warm glow. I envied him that moment. I wanted those memories, those thoughts, and feelings. All I could do was turn away and head up the wooden staircase towards my office.
Good night, Sam.
Good night, Mr. Vago.
He started whistling as he went about his business. I made my way to the third floor of my office door. It had the letters Skull Hunter Investigations in big black letters on the opaque glass window. In my mind, I kept hearing Sam's voice saying,
"Every day alone was a wasted day."
Over and over again in my head. I tried to shake the words as I unlocked the door and stepped inside. The room was bathed in an eerie blue glow that came from the snow reflecting light through the window behind my desk. I stood there for a moment, looking at the sum total of my life. Books and files scattered about the floor, piles of trash that had accumulated from weeks of neglect filled the corners. Along the far wall was a broken-down couch with a pillow and a torn blanket. This was my life. Everything I owned, everything I had accomplished in 37 years of living was in that room. I balled the hat in my hands and threw it across the room. I stared at my faint reflection in the window. What a loser. What a no-good, rotten, dirty loser.
I wouldn't say that.
A voice spoke from the shadows. I swung quickly towards the voice, fumbling in my coat pocket until I realized I hadn't taken my gun with me that night. It was a holiday. I mean, what could happen on a holiday? Who's there? Slowly, I made my way to the desk and clicked on the lamp. The lamp replaced the blue with a dim amber light from the 60-watt bulb. I saw the figure of a man sitting in a chair against the wall near the bathroom.
I warn you, I've got a gun.
No, you don't.
Okay. I don't have a gun. Who are you? And how'd you get in here?
I moved cautiously towards the phone on my desk and quietly lifted the receiver and set it down. Without looking down, my fingers dialed the 2-number extension to Sam's phone in the lobby.
There's no need to be alarmed.
No, no reason at all. I just come into my locked office and find you here, in the dark. Why should I be alarmed?
I reached down and wrapped my hand around a letter opener and slid the blade into my sleeve as I palmed the handle.
Mr. Vargo.
Okay, you know my name. Now who are you?
My name is Dudley, and what I have to tell you is of vital importance.
He got up from the chair. When he came into the light, I could make out his salt-and-peppered hair neatly combed to the right. He was wearing what looked like an expensive business suit. He wore no coat or hat, and his shoes had small droplets of water on them, like he had recently been walking in the snow. His face was smooth-shaven. His features were strong, yet not threatening. I relaxed somewhat, until I heard a loud knock on the office door.
Mr. Vargo, you all right in there? Mr. Vargo, open the door.
All right then, Dudley. Stay right there.
I quickly opened the office door. Sam burst through with gun drawn and eyes wide.
What's wrong? What's wrong? What's going on in here?
How did that guy get in here?
Who?
Sam stretched his neck, looking around the room, puzzled.
What do you mean, who? That guy, right?
I turned around, but nobody was there.
There was a guy here, just a second ago.
Well, you better stand back, Mr. Vargo. I'll check the other room.
Sam carefully walked to the bathroom and turned on the light.
Nobody in here?
Well, he couldn't have just... Huh. Never mind, Sam. I think it's all right.
But...
I must have dozed off for a minute and dreamt the whole thing.
Dreamt it? Well, how'd you go about dialing that phone? I mean, really now.
Don't worry about it, Sam. It's all right.
I grabbed Sam's shoulders and gently guided him out the door.
I'm very sorry for bothering you.
But, no, wait a minute now.
Have a good night, Sam. I waited until I saw the shadow of Sam leave. Then I turned back to the empty room. Okay, whoever you are, or whatever you are, you can come back now.
Thank you.
The man's voice came from the empty air as he faded back into view.
Okay, so you're a ghost. Great. A ghost named Dudley.
I threw the letter opener back on the desk.
Look, I'm tired tonight. Couldn't you haunt me in the morning?
Oh, I'm no ghost, Mr. Vargo.
He smiled at me with bright, perfect teeth.
Really? You could just vanish and appear in thin air. But you're not a ghost.
I took off my coat and hung it on an old rusty nail near my desk.
No, I'm not.
He picked up my balled-up hat and handed it to me.
All right. I give up. What are you?
I sat down behind my desk, putting up my tired feet.
I'm an angel.
My feet suddenly dropped from the desk.
You're a what?
You do believe in angels, don't you, Mr. Vargo?
Sure. Right along with the Easter Bunny and the Tooth Fairy.
It is not important that you believe in me. However, it is of utmost importance that you believe in what I'm about to tell you.
He sat on the edge of my desk. I wiped the tiredness from my face and saw the seriousness in Dudley's eyes.
Okay, Mr. Angel. What is so important that you came all the way from heaven to tell me?
My name is Dudley. I didn't come from heaven. Well, not directly anyway. I came from Boston, and I need your help.
Look, Dudley, I'm tired. Very tired. It's been a long year so far. My immediate plan is to sleep the rest of this year away and hope the next one's better.
I do not believe you are grasping the situation.
Oh, I grasp. An angel named Dudley has come from heaven to get my help. Right. Got it.
Yes.
Good night, Dudley.
Dudley stood up from the desk, straightened his coat, and stared at me for a minute. He cocked his head as though his gaze could somehow wedge its way through my closed eyelids.
There's a 6-year-old girl whose parents were killed in an accident this morning.
That is rough, but I can't bring them back. It's kind of your department, isn't it?
Suddenly, the desk was torn from under my feet and flung across the room. I lurched forward, stunned as Dudley stared me straight in the eye.
This girl is important to me. Understand she is under my care, and I take her well-being very seriously, as should you.
Okay.
He gave me a look that froze me to my very soul.
All right, you got my attention.
Good.
He stood back up and relaxed his stance.
Now, this storm that is hovering over your city, anything about it seems strange to you?
I'm not a weatherman. What has this got to do with the girl you were talking about?
Her name is Cindy Glantz. She is currently residing at the Chicago Nursery and Half-Orphan Asylum. You know where that is.
How would I?
Dudley looked at me and cocked his head. In my mind, a vision flashed of a brick building.
Yeah, I guess I do. But I'll have to drive there, and this weather.
You'll be fine. Trust me.
But, Oh, yeah. Angel. I forgot.
You must understand that Cindy is not an ordinary girl.
I kind of figured that one out.
She has a strong power that she cannot fully control, nor is completely aware.
What kind of power are we talking about here?
Dudley walked to the window and pointed to the storm outside.
This kind of power.
You mean the storm? She caused the storm?
In a way, yes. You see, her parents knew of this power and were able to control it and her. But now that they are gone...
There's no one to stop her.
The implications of what I was saying became overwhelming.
What can I do against such power?
You will find the way. The answer is there. You just have to find it, and you will when the time is right.
Wait a minute. It just occurred to me. If you're an angel, then why...
Haven't you ever heard that it's wrong to question the ways of God? Let's just say that you were chosen and have been called.
Okay, but...
As I spoke to him, he vanished from view.
Great. So now I guess I go on a road trip for God at 3 o'clock in the morning to stop a 6-year-old orphan from burying Chicago in snow. Yeah, this year just gets better and better.
The next 3 hours went by very slowly as I made my way inch by inch through the blinding snow. The wind howled outside and my wipers couldn't keep up with the ice accumulating on the windshield. Somehow, the car managed to stay on the slick road as it barreled through the deep drifts that had built up on the highway.
Several times, I seriously thought about turning back as the craziness of it all hit me. Nevertheless, call it stubbornness or stupidity, I continued until finally the gates of the Chicago Nursery and Half-Orphan Asylum loomed ahead. I drove down the tree-lined driveway and stopped just shy of a lamppost. The storm was raging even stronger, as though this was the epicenter of its rage. It took all my strength to open the car door, which was ripped from my hand. Barely able to see, I plowed through the deep white powder to the front door and knocked. I could barely hear my fist hit the wood as the wind howled around me. Even though it had been a short distance to the house, I was frozen by the time the door swung open, and an older woman in a long black dress stepped outside. Her face was that of fear and hope, like that of someone who had been praying for a miracle.
Are you him? Are you him?
I guess it depends on who you were expecting.
Come with me.
She gathered the hem of her dress and rushed down the narrow hallway. She paused just long enough to look back and see me standing there, confused.
Come now.
I did as I was told. I followed her past a large dining area that was filled with children. They were all huddled together, either for warmth or safety. I couldn't tell. She led me to a back staircase, where she stood shivering in fear.
Up there. It's up there.
What's up there?
Her, the girl. He said you'd be coming for the girl.
I didn't have to ask who. I knew it must have been Dudley. When I placed my hand on the handrail, it seemed to be vibrating as I made my way up the stairs. There was a light at the upper landing. The air seemed thick and heavy. Several wooden doors lined the hall that led in both directions. I listened, but all I could hear was the sound of the wind wailing outside. Cindy? Cindy?
No!
The voice screamed in my head as a force threw my body down the hallway. Cindy, I'm here to help you.
No!
The sound of her voice pounded inside my head.
They're gone, they're gone. No, I won't let them be gone.
I felt her presence behind a door down the hall. I quickly rushed for the door and opened it. Inside, I was frozen with shock. The room seemed to be spinning and warping around me. The ceiling looked as though it had melted into the floor and the walls curved and twisted around themselves. In the center sat a small, blonde-haired girl, rocking back and forth, bathed in a red glow that emanated from her like needles. It was hard to focus as the chaos around me shifted continuously, throwing me off balance. Cindy, please, let me help you. Her head snapped forward.
I hurt inside. Here, you help me hurt.
And with that statement, my world stopped. I was suddenly standing in a field, growing wild with tall grasses as high as my waist. The sun felt warm against my face as the calm breeze bristled the hair on the back of my neck. Across the field, I saw a woman and a small child. Abby? Nessa? I tried to move towards them, but my feet wouldn't move. Looking down, I was horrified to see that my foot was buried ankle deep in the belly of a naked man's body. The man opened his eyes and stared at me with a gaping expression. All around me, bodies were scattered in the field, moaning, reaching their torn, bloody arms to me. I felt them pulling me down. I tried to call out to Abby, but no sound would come out. I pushed with all my strength, but I couldn't scream as the wave of dead, rotting corpses surrounded me. The next thing I knew, I was back in my office in Chicago. It was pitch black, except for a faint glow from the window. I could feel eyes staring at me and hear the voices of heavy breathing all around. Rushing for my desk, I tried to turn on the desk lamp, but it wouldn't come on. The walls of my office began to pulsate. I reached into a drawer, pulled out my gun. Shadowy, whispery voices called my name as the walls began to close in on me. I fired my pistol, not really sure as to what I was shooting at. Finally, the walls crushed my desk, pressed me against the window. The glass shattered as I plummeted towards the cement sidewalk below. I felt my body hit with a sickening thud as I heard my bones break against the hard surface. A wave of unbearable pain coursed through me as people walked past my mangled, broken body. I began to black out. When I heard my name,
Rick,
I turned and found myself in a familiar cabin in Wisconsin. Again, the voice called out.
Rick.
So I walked towards it. It came from behind a door. I slowly opened the door. and saw Abby sitting on the side of a bed, crying. What's wrong? I kept calling to her, but it was as if she couldn't hear me. Abby! Abby! It's me, Rick! I walked over to the bed and noticed that a figure was covered up in the blankets. Oh my God, no. No, not Nessa, no! I quickly pulled back the blanket and was horrified to see my body lying there. Two colored stones were placed on my eyes and my hands were folded against my chest. I stumbled backwards in shock. This can't be! I said, unable to draw my eyes away. Abby rose from the bed and walked to a wooden stand across the room. She looked back over her shoulder at my corpse. Her face was red and swollen with grief. Her hand grabbed something metallic from the stand as she turned and faced the bed. No! I screamed as she lifted a pistol to her head. I rushed towards her, but just before I could reach her, a shot rang out, and the room went black. And I was all alone, except for a distant light. It took all my strength of will to run towards it, as my legs felt like lead weights. When I got there, I saw a tall chair with a man who had a little girl sitting in his lap. He was reading some story to her. A pretty woman appeared next to them, smiling, as she kissed the little girl on the forehead. I stepped forward, and they looked up at me, covered in sweat. The man smiled at me and motioned for me to come closer. But the little girl frowned. It was Cindy, and she was angry.
You go away from here. I won't let you take them away from me.
The man and woman just kept smiling and looking at me. I began to understand. Cindy had hidden herself away in this world where her mother and father could be with her. Cindy, please, listen to me. I'm just here to help you. Cindy got down from her father's lap and walked to me, scowling.
I don't need you. Go away!
You gotta trust me. I'm not here to take your mother and father away from you. I knelt down, bringing me closer to her level.
I don't care. Go away. I can make you go away.
Wait, please. Look at those people. Are they really the mom and dad you remember? Can she answer your questions and tuck you in bed? Can she wipe your tears and make you feel better when you're sad? When they hug you, do you feel warm and safe? Or kind of empty inside?
I don't understand.
Those aren't your mommy and daddy. Those are a memory that lives here in your head. And a feeling that you have here in your heart. No one can ever take that away from you. You can hold on to that forever. When you feel sad or alone, just close your eyes and remember them the way they were.
But I have them here, with me, now.
No, they're not real. They're a vision, like a picture. And you can't live in a picture. Come with me back to the real world. I will help to make you feel safe again. I promise.
But...
Tears began to form in her eyes. I looked at the fading image of her parents, still smiling.
I'll miss them.
Yes, but that's okay. When you miss someone, it means that you are thinking of them. And as long as you are thinking of someone, they're never really gone. You don't have to stay here anymore. You can take them with you, in your heart and in your mind. I watched her face as the image continued to fade away until it was totally gone.
Goodbye.
Turning to me, she leapt into my arms and began sobbing uncontrollably. I stood up. The darkness all around us began to focus, and we were back in the room at the orphanage. I wrapped her in a blanket, carried her out of the room, and down the stairs. The woman in the black dress gasped as we passed her. I opened the front door and stepped outside. The storm was gone, and the sun was cresting the horizon, making the snow sparkle in the new dawn. Placing her gently in the back seat of my car, she closed her eyes, falling into a deep sleep. I knew what I had to do. I knew where I had to take the little girl. Several hours later, I stopped the car after driving most of the day. I stepped out of my car into the fresh snow. The door to a small cabin opened, and a little girl rushed to me.
Mr. Rick!
Nessa ran to me and wrapped her little arms around my neck. Hey, kiddo! I told you I'd be back.
Yes, you did.
Abby, I set Nessa down and nervously took off my hat. I brought someone with me.
Hey, Mama, there's a girl in the back seat.
Yeah, about that, you see.
No need to explain. I knew you were coming and why.
But how... I was about to ask how she knew, but she just smiled. She knew I already knew the answer. There was a lot more to Abby and Nessa than met the eye. I had found that out in our last encounter. I stepped onto the porch and stared into those eyes that I had been dreaming about. Abby, I know how you said I wasn't ready, and, well, maybe you're right, but...
We can talk about that later. You better bring her in before she catches a death of cold.
I nodded, and then walked back to the car where Nessa had her nose pressed against the window.
Mr. Rick, are you staying for Christmas dinner?
Christmas? Oh, no. Christmas. I had totally forgotten that this was Christmas Day.
I don't have any...
You have brought us two great gifts. What a better way to celebrate this holy day than to give the gift of hope to someone who has lost everything. Your gifts shall bless this home.
What about the second gift?
Well, we will discuss that later. Come inside and bring your gift with you.
The warmth from her smile filled me, and I felt as though a heavy weight was lifted off my soul. I quickly gathered Cindy into my arms and began to carry her to the house. I could hear Sam's words echoing in the back of my head as I stepped onto the porch. Every day alone is a wasted day, he had said. Well, for the first time in a long time, I wasn't going to waste a day.
This episode of The Skull Hunter has been brought to you by BewilderingStories.com, your number one source for online literature. For a written version of this story and many others, check out www.BewilderingStories.com. This episode starred Mike Lear as Rick Vargo, Amber Jo as Cindy and Nessa, Patricia Lynn as Abby, and special guest stars Sharon Logan as the woman and Clyde Andrews as Dudley the Angel. Tune in next time for another exciting adventure of Rick Vargo as the Skull Hunter. This has been an Attic Productions, copyright 2006.